Blog Talk Radio.
Hello?
Doug, can you hear me?
Yes.
Are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
I think I might have had some kind of problem myself on this end. But in case you did not hear my introduction, what I was saying was I'm glad that you were able to join us tonight and be a part of History Speaks. History Speaks is sponsored by Gospel Gold. And since Gospel Gold is a history program specifically designed for historical preservation of history, one of the things that we were doing this year to talk to various people in their fields of endeavor. We wanted to talk to people who were studying history, people who have made history. We've talked to scholars. We've talked to book authors. We're talking about people who are making history, people who have made history, and people who are continuing to make history in America. And I'm so glad that you were able to join me tonight. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. I really have no complaints.
Well, good. I'm glad you're here.
As an old man.
But we're going to talk about some other people as well, but I wanted to start off talking about you. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself? How did you get into music? And then later on, how did you become go into entertainment? Because you are an entertainer, you are a musician, you have a world traveler, you travel all over the country, you've played with some of the most recognizable names during the 60s, 70s, and 80s. You're a member of the DC Legendary Musicians Association, and you have gathered much information over your years of experience. So how did you start this? How did this come about?
Well, when we first moved to Washington, My brother was the manager of a group, and it was called Little Royal and the Swing Masters.
Mm-hmm.
And the band used to rehearse at his house in the basement. And that drew me interested in becoming a musician and playing in a band. So Little Royal took me out on the road with me while I was very young, like 14. And I would go out during the summer months when we went in school, either around Thanksgiving and Christmas and Easter. I would always go out on the road with the band and travel around the country. And I wanted to be a musician. So I was offered the job playing if I would go take music in school. So that's what I did. When I was in high school, I took up saxophone. And I started playing saxophone. And when I graduated from high school, I was permanently out on the road with Little Royal and the Swing Masters. And I did that for quite a few years. And while playing with him, I had the opportunity of playing with other artists, such as Carla Thomas, Rufus Thomas, Millie Jackson. I could go down the list. But it's quite a few artists that I've played behind. Solomon Burke, the Manhattans. And it was fun. And this is one of the things that happened in my life.
We're going to call, I'm going to come back and talk about some of those names in just a minute. But when you were coming up, when you were just starting to be a musician, who were some of the people that you listened to, or who were some of your mentors during that time?
Well, I used to listen to Roland Kirk. I used to like Junior Walker. James Brown was my main artist that I used to listen to, because I had a band myself called Doug and the Fabulous Flares when I was in school. And I was doing the singing then and dancing on stage, dancing like James Brown and singing. And we had the opportunity to do a TV show in Washington called Teen-O-Rama. And that was at WOOK radio station. They had a TV station too at the time. That was in Northwest mm-hmm. Washington. And I had the opportunity of playing Resurrection City when they had the March on Washington. And after that, I graduated in 69. We did the show at Resurrection City in 68, and in 69, once I graduated from high school, I went out on the road with Little Royal Swing Masters.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that people may not know about Washington is that Washington has a boatload of musicians. Washington was a band town or a musician's town. It has always produced a lot of musicians out of Washington, D.C. The D.C. Legendary Musicians Association, could you tell us about that?
Yes, this is under the leadership of Dr. Sandra Butler Truesdale. As a matter of fact, she was awarded yesterday for her work in the arts in the district. And she formed this to help musicians that have played with some of everyone, all the big time names and stuff. And then a lot of the time the musicians come back here. And back in the day when we were playing, they weren't really taking out Social Security and all that stuff. And it put the musicians in a position, whereas when they got older, they didn't really have anything to fall back on. And Dr. Sandra Butler-Truesdale is trying to make it so the musicians can have, medical insurance and dental insurance and different things that a person would need to survive after the fact of being out on the road playing with various artists. And you need something for when you get older to fall back on. And most musicians really don't have that.
Mm-hmm.
Especially
if
you got the one out front that's really making all of the money, the real big money. So she's one of the people that are in place or are trying to put it in place to receive our due.
I am familiar with Dr. Truesdale's work. She is a great lady, graduate of Howard University, and she's doing work preserving the history of black music in the D.C. area. I would like to interview her at some point, maybe later on in the year. But I know she's doing a lot of great work in that area. I'm going to ask you a couple of names. We're going to talk about Lil Royal in just a few minutes because I know we have a lot to talk about with him. But I'm going to throw out a few names, people that you and I both know who are in the music field. And I just want you to tell us who they are. Who is Gregory Gaskins?
Gregory Gaskins is the first guitar player that the Manhattans has ever had. And Greg Gaskins played with was the band director for the Sweet Inspirations, where he traveled with Elvis Presley for years, and he was the band director behind the Sweet Inspirations. He traveled with the Manhattans also for years. And matter of fact, after he left the Sweet Inspirations and came back to the Manhattans, and he is a partner with me in my record company called Hot Cocoa Records. And we had a record out some years back called Fantasy and What You Get You Got. And we have some more things that we're working on now. And right now, Greg is kind of laid back. He's semi-retired, but we still have some things that we need to put out, and we will.
Go ahead.
We'll be with a group called Mad Dog and the Lowlifers, which we were very proud of.
I'm going to ask you about that. There was a group, as I said before, in D.C. D.C. was a band town, and there were certain bands in D.C. who were known throughout the city. They were known not just to be good bands, but they were also solid bands. They were real funky at the time. They had the rhythm. They had the blues. And they knew how to put on a show. And one of those groups was called Mad Dog and the Lowlifers. Now, how are the Roe Brothers doing?
The Roe Brothers, one of them died, Kenneth Roe.
Hmm.
He died a few years ago. He was a guitar player. He used to play guitar with us. And Clifford Rowe, which we used to call Mad Dog, he's still here. You know, he's not playing as much, but he's still hanging around.
Okay. And who are some of the other members? Go ahead.
Other members of Mad Dog?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
David Akers, after he left our group, he went with the Midnight Movers and played with Wilson Pickett for about 15 to 18 years.
Mm-hmm.
Keith Lee was still playing when he was playing with Mad Dog and the Lowlifers, the guitar player Keith Lee. He was also playing for the Sweet Inspirations and traveling with Elvis Presley. And when Elvis wasn't working, Keith would come back to D.C. And, of course, he played with our band. And at the same day that Elvis died, he went to Portland, Maine. Elvis was going to do a show up there, and I took Pete to the airport to go up, which the band normally gets there the day before Elvis does, on the very first trip when they go on tour. And he had gone up, and he said he was in the bar watching TV, and they flashed it on the news that Elvis had passed. And, you know, like it shocked the whole group because all of them had gathered up there waiting to, you know, for the next day for Elvis to arrive and to perform, and everything got canceled. And they were scrambling, people trying to get back home and stuff, you know, especially guys that had gone up and didn't have no money. Because on the first, when you first get to the gig, Elvis had a meeting place that everyone would meet, and then Elvis had a chartered plane that took them everywhere. And then when they got to where they were going, they had buses that picked them up at a hotel and took them to the show. And all of that was taken away once Elvis was dead, because then nobody knew what to do, really. And we had to send Keith money to get back to Washington.
It was a shocker. It was definitely a shocker. During that time, before you went on the road, but while you were on the road, when you were playing with Mad Dog, for instance, what are some of the places that you were playing? What are some of the clubs that were open at that time in D.C.?
In D.C., Rand's was open at 14th and I, Street Northwest.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Some other places. Old Simon's. We played a place over the southeast called Simon's. Then they changed that to Terrell's. And we were the house band at Jackie Lee's, a nightclub, which was on 1st and Kennedy Street, Northwest.
That's a famous place there. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. If you were in a band in D.C. and you didn't play Jackie Lee's, you didn't play nowhere.
Yeah. Back in the day, it was really good. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it was good.
Also, they redid it. And I haven't really spent in there. I just went back to look at it. It's beautiful. They totally remodeled it. But
wow.
You used to have line of people standing outside waiting to get it to see the show.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Jackie Lee's was famous.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm going to switch the conversation a little bit. Swing Masters. Now, the Swing Masters, I'll tell you one of the things, and I'm going to give you my personal experience. One of the things that impressed me about the Swing Masters was it wasn't just a band. It was a professional band. This was a band who went on stage. They looked good. The shoes were shined. Their pants were creased. Every hair was in place. The Swing Masters was my introduction to professional musicianship and being on the road. What can you tell us about the Swing Masters?
I learned a lot from Swing Masters. Like I was saying earlier, I came in at an early age. I was the youngest one in the band, matter of fact, when I got with them. And I used to ask these guys everything. I know they got tired of me because I wanted to make sure that I was good just like them. I wanted to be perfect because the band seemed to be perfect. And I wanted to do everything perfectly myself. So listen and ask questions. But the group was very good. You know, I loved playing with them. The director, Andre Sims, at the time, which he passed, matter of fact, in January, I think January 5th of this year. He's the writer of the song that you played on the opening of your show, Razor Blade. Andre wrote that. He's the tenor sax player. And also, with the Swing Masters, we actually ended up hiring a guy named Teddy Pendergrass. You might be familiar with him.
Tell us about it.
In 1968, we were playing in Atlantic City, New Jersey. And I was out with the band, you know, doing this, my summer thing with the group. And our drummer, Marvin Jolly, which I keep in contact with him every day, all the time, quite frequently, rather. We're still in contact. Marvin left the group, and who did he go with? Horace Silver. I know he went with a jazz group playing drums for them. And we needed a new drummer, so Little Royal told me, said, Doug, so we're going to have to go to D.C. to find a drummer. And I told him that I had met this guy that worked in the club that was a porter from Philadelphia that said he plays drums. And they said he was playing with a little local group out of Philly. But he was in Atlantic City, you know, for the summer, you know, to work the jobs and stuff that they had going on around there, because a lot of stuff went on in Atlantic City. And, the, you know, around 1968, it was a lot of job opportunities during summer months. And he told me to bring the guy to the dressing room, which I did. I went and got Teddy and took him up, and I introduced him. And the next day, next morning, after doing a breakfast show in Atlantic City at this club called Ed Chill's Lounge, which was located at Illinois and Baltic Avenue, he had us to take, well, we took Teddy to Philadelphia, Little Royal and I drove, and we went to his mom's house, and Little Royal talked to his mother about him going out on the road, and I was telling her that he would make sure that Teddy was okay, and if anything happened, whereas he couldn't make it with the group, or that he would make sure that he got back home and everything. He wouldn't leave him stranded, in other words. And he got them to know that he definitely was heavy on no drugs in this group whatsoever. So we left Little Royal at Teddy's mom's house, and Teddy and I went around to pick up his drums that he said he had, which we rode around in Philadelphia all day long. And Teddy only came out of one place with a floor tom. Out of the whole trap set, he only had a floor tom. He didn't even have the snare. And I got back to his mom's house that evening because I kept trying to find a phone booth in Philly so I could call. We could call his mother's house to let him know that it was going to take us longer than expected. So I was gone like all day from early that morning until about 4:30 that evening. I'm riding around taking Teddy to different places looking for these drums that we never collected. And so all the phone booths were out. Every one we stopped at, someone had tore it off the receiver off the hook, just vandalized it all over Philly.
Right.
We didn't find not one working telephone booth. And anyway, we went back and picked Little Royal up. Teddy had his one drum. We put it in the truck of his Little Royal's Lincoln Continental. He had a 6 or 7 Lincoln Continental. We put it in the trunk, and we drove back to Philadelphia, to Atlantic City. And Little Royal gave me money and told me to take the van up to Irvin's Music Shop on Atlantic Avenue and buy Teddy a set of drums. So let him pick them out and pay for them. So he gave me the money, and I took Teddy up. Teddy picked the drums out that they needed, and I paid for them. I forgot what the price was now. But we went back and we rehearsed them, and Little Roy hired him. And after that, we went on tour. After we left Atlantic City, we went to Newark, New Jersey, and played the Continental Ballroom. That was a one-nighter. And after that, I had to go back to school because it was September. That was when he hired Teddy. It was the last week in August of 1968. And after we left Atlantic City, we did the Continental Ballroom, and then the band was going to Canada to do, I think back to Halifax, Nova Scotia to do a show. But I had to go back to school and to finish doing last year in school, high school. And Teddy stayed with the band until December of 1968, and then Little Royal ended up hiring a Marvin Jolly back, the drummer that left. He just gave him a raise and hired him back. Little Roy hired two drummers. He hired Teddy and a guy named Willie that came from a group called the Four Pennies. He hired Willie and Teddy, and both of those drummers together could not play as well as Marvin Jolly did. So Little Roy just got up off their money and paid Marvin more money and hired him back.
Well, I'm sure Teddy had a great career. So, you know, but rest his soul. But those are good stories, man, about how you started. I want to talk about Lil Roy. Go right ahead. Yes, something else you want to say?
No, go ahead.
Now, I want to talk about Lil Roy for a minute. I'm going to play Lil Royal's one of his biggest hit, Jealous, and then I'm going to come back and I want to talk about Lil Royal for a few minutes. All right?
Okay.
All right. Just hold on 1 second. We're gonna listen to him a little bit.
I got something to say right here. You know, I'm not jealous because I'm mean, honey. I'm jealous because I love you, and I don't want nobody else to have you. Now, you know what? If you got someone that you really love, you don't mind standing looking that person dead in the eye and tell them you really love them. How many of you women out there have been in love before? You know, when did you love that someone so much, there was nothing in the world that you wouldn't do for them? You cook the food, put it on the table for them, wash their dirty clothes. Nothing in the world that you wouldn't do for that love. But deep down in your heart, you know that that someone don't care a doggone thing about you. Now, you can't help but cry sometimes. But you know what? If you see them with someone else, you know you love them. You know you got to be jealous of them. Because when you love someone, you don't want nobody else to have your love. And that's why I got to stand up today, baby, and tell you something like this. You know what? I can't help it, but I got to say it. Once I was in love with a woman, I didn't have sense enough to know how much she meant to me. You know what? When I saw her with someone else, I didn't know what love was, how much love was to be jealous of her. But when that woman walked out and left me standing alone, do you know I began to burn all inside? And I'd just like to walk over and hold your hand. And I'd like to tell you something like this. I'd like to say, baby, baby, oh baby, I just wanna be your man. Can I be your man, baby? And she looked at me with tears in her eyes. And these are the words that she began to say. She began to say, oh, baby, I'm so jealous. I'm so jealous of you, honey. I don't want nobody else to have it. Because I just love you. Yes, I do. Yes, I love you. Can't you see me down on my knees falling to you, baby? I'm falling because I love
you. Little Royal, one of the things that you have done, Doug, is you have kept the legacy of Royal alive, and I applaud you for that. One of the things that is important is that we keep our history alive. What can you tell us about Lil Royal? I know him. You know him. I worked for him for over 11 years. During that time, I got a chance to meet some most important people, had to play behind some of the most recognizable names, as I said before, during that time. What can you tell us about Lil Royal?
I could tell you that he was never late for a gig. Yes, indeed. He would make sure that he left in time to get to the next job on time. Lil Royal did not tolerate being late. If you come to the show late, you will get a fine. He will find you on stage if you be messing up, making mistakes. He did not play. He was just like James Brown on stage. It was like a twin.
Yeah.
But
one of the things that people don't know is that James Brown and Royal had a special connection. There is an understanding that just like Brown had a lot of kids, his daddy had a lot of kids as well. Am I right?
Say it again.
I said that there's an understanding that Brown and Bull Royal had a connection, had a special connection. One of the things that people don't know is that just like Brown had a lot of kids, so his father had a lot of kids. Am I right?
Right. Exactly.
Right. Right. And Brown and James had a special connection. I often saw them speaking to one another. He said that he was James
Brown's
brother.
Royal.
Right.
Brown and Royal. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. They had a special connection. And could you tell us about that?
Brother. James always said that him and Royal was brothers. He told Royal, he said, man, we got to be brothers. We're too much alike to not be brothers. That's what he told him. So,
exactly.
When I first started traveling with Lil Royal, his bookings on the placards would say James Brown's brother. It would say James Brown half brother, Lil Royal. I used to plug him as the second hardest working man in show business. But actually, Royal worked just as hard as James did on stage. He would work. And he would work the man.
Yeah, he sure would.
Soaking wet.
Yeah, yeah. That was a show to see. If you ever had a chance, those who remember seeing Lil Royal, you knew that with Lil Royal with the swing masters behind him, you would go home just as tired as we would because you would dance all night long. one of the things I wanted to talk about Lil Royal was that, you know, one of the things that impressed me about him is that he broke the stereotype. Royal didn't drink. He didn't smoke. He didn't cuss. He was pretty much a clean living guy, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. Yes.
Yeah, and I remember that about him, and he was, like I said, he broke the mold, whereas you saw a lot of that out there on the road. Royal was completely against all of that, and
yes,
he would speak about it from time to time as well. Lil Royal, what about Sade King Records down in Nashville, Tennessee? What kind of connection did he have with them?
Well, Stardate King was actually the distribution company for Little Rose Labels, Trias record label, whereas him and a guy named Leroy Little, which was a promoter, and Huey Moore, which I had a record company also in Houston, Texas, called Sugar Hill Records. He was, Barbara Mason was one of Huey's clients, and Archie Bell and the Drells. In fact, Archie Bell used one of the soundtracks that you were playing on yourself that we recorded in Houston, Texas at Sugar Hill Studios. I forget which one of the songs it is that Archie Bell and the Drells did, but we did do a lot of material and leave it in the studio, and they will go through and select what they wanted to put their songs on.
Yeah. A lot of people don't understand how the recording industry works. A lot of musicians will record for various different artists. Your name doesn't go on the record or anything like that, but your sound goes on the record. And a lot of people don't know that. We did a lot of recording down in Tennessee and in Texas. And I don't know, some of that recording was Royals and some of it was somebody else's, you know. So, but that's how the recording industry is. If you're a musician, you know, that's basically your job is to play music, you know, regardless of who it's for. If you're told to play, you play, right? I remember us being on tours as the Swing Masters Royals band, but we played behind people like Tyrone Davis. We played behind Millie Jackson. We played behind Candace Staton. And you know, what was that? What kind of
Rufus Thomas?
Go right ahead. That's what I'm asking. I can't remember all of them. Who are some of the others? Do you remember?
Yeah, Colin and Rufus and Millie Jackson was three of the ones that I can remember. Baby Washington. I can't think of the rest of them right. The first tour that Little Royal and the Swing Masters did was behind Smokey and the Miracles. And we had a chance to play behind the Marvelettes, Smokey, the Miracles, and the Swing Masters did their thing also.
Colin Thomas and Rufus Thomas. I don't think I ever got paid for that gig. I don't know what happened to that one.
You're talking about when we were going to in Florida.
Yeah.
You're talking about
you know,
tour in Florida.
Yeah. That was something though, to watch him do the funky chicken.
Yeah.
But Colin was sweet.
Rufus wasn't on the show down in Florida that we did. I think we played him behind Rufus in D.C. and a few other places. But Carla was on tour. It was just Little Royal and Carla and us, the Swing Masters. And we was doing a tour in Florida. Florida, we did South Carolina. It's right at the border. I can't think of the name of it. It's down by Darien, Georgia.
Okay. Let me ask you, was Royal originally from Durham, from D.C. or from North Carolina?
He was from North Carolina. He was raised partially in Salisbury, North Carolina, and then he moved to Durham, North Carolina, before he came to D.C. His grandmother actually was raising him, adopted him, really, down in Salisbury, North Carolina. And then he moved to Durham, North Carolina, and then his aunt. He moved to Washington, D.C. with his aunt, Zelma.
Aunt Zelma, yeah. I remember Aunt Zelma real well. Roy was a family man, and I remember going to Aunt Zelma's house many times, eating some of her food. She was a good cook, too. And she was really close to her. And what was her niece's name?
Gail and Betty.
Okay. Right, Betty. I remember Betty. Right, right. I remember them.
And Betty passed. Betty 3 years ago.
Oh, wow. Okay. Did Royal have any children?
He had about 5 kids, as I know of. He had 2 girls and 3 boys. He has 2 boys that live in Durham, North Carolina, right now, I believe. Roy and Royal.
Wow. I would like to meet them.
Yeah, well, they're right down there where you are. Roy and Royal, and he has a daughter named Ronisha that lives in Charleston, South Carolina. He has a daughter living in New York. I forgot her name, but she was at his services. And I got a chance to meet his grandkids, and they look just like him.
Wow.
He had a son in Boston, Massachusetts also. And he had one son that passed that was from Washington, D.C.
Okay. One of the things I noticed about Lou Royal was that even though his name wasn't as big as a lot of other names, everybody respected Royal. Whenever they saw Lou Royal coming, they knew there was a certain amount of respect that was given to him. Could you speak on that, why that was?
Because are you speaking of the other musicians or people in general?
Yep.
Because the
people in general,
they knew that they would have to work real hard if Royal was on the show, because he was a hard act to follow. So a lot of times they would like to put him on last to kind of start a show, opposed to have to follow him. Because he was a hard act to follow, because that man gave his all whenever he did a show. He went 110% every time.
You sure did.
He really did.
You sure did. I witnessed that myself with my own eyes. I would say, Royal, please. He'd be wide open.
Even up to the time before he passed, He would work us, man. I'm saying, look, he 80 some years old. He working like that. And I'm going to stay sweating. I'll be soaking wet. Did I lose you?
No. I'm here. I'm here. I'm just remembering. My mind is going back, you know. I remember how hard he worked and how hard he expected us to work as well. And he cared for his audience. He really loved his audience. And he wanted he wanted his audience to be satisfied with the show.
Yes, he did. It was in Lévis, Quebec, Canada. And doing the show, and he lost his voice. And he went to a doctor, and the doctor told him that he needed to rest his throat for about a week. Royals told him that I have to do a show tonight to answer. We need to rest your throat. He said, well, what other option do I have? And the doctor told him that he could try dripping some warm butter down his throat and see if that would help. We did the show that whole week with him dripping butter down his throat, because he kept, even after every show, every time he would come out on stage to perform, he would do the show and his boss would come out. But when he finished that show that night, his boss would be gone again. But he did a whole week, and the audience was satisfied. He completed that show and did his thing.
Yeah.
But he didn't let the show that he was going to do that show. He said, man, the show got to go on.
That's right. show's got to go on. Through the years, there have been many musicians who have been in and out of the Swing Masters and played behind Roy. Can you name some of those musicians?
Yes. Ray Clark, which went with Major Lance. Ray Clark mm-hmm. was a guitar player. Matter of fact, I think Ray was one of Roy's first guitar players. Woody Woodson, which was a drummer that also played with Otis Redding, but he played with Little Royal first. Woody Woodson is the drummer that was playing on It's Your Thing by the Isley Brothers. And mm-hmm. he also played behind Royal first. Bobby Parker was a blues guitar player. He played with Little Royal, and Bobby also played with Jimi Hendrix, and he was very popular. He died a few years ago also, Bobby Parker, and he had a huge funeral here in Washington, D.C. Who else? Gregory Gaskin played with Little Royal also. Ron mm-hmm. Holloway. Mm-hmm. Ron Holloway has been entered into the congressional books as one of the best saxophone players in the United States or in the world. Ron is very good mm-hmm. and a very mm-hmm. close friend of mine, kind of saxophonist.
Mm-hmm.
Cliff Rowe, the one that we call Mad Dog, so Mad Dog, their little mm-hmm. life is. That also mm-hmm. played with the inspirations of Elvis Presley. He played with.
What about Herman Gibson Dam? What about Herman Gibson Dam?
You talk about the guitar player, the albino guitar player that was playing with his teeth and all kinds of stuff. Yes, Herman mm-hmm. Gibson Dam, very good vocalist, and he worked with Little Royal for quite a few years. I would like to see him today.
I would too. Herman was awesome, man. He was an awesome musician too. Yeah, he was awesome. What about Donnie Chillis?
Donnie Chillis, you'll find him playing on most of all of Little Royal's records, the guitar player. Donnie Chillis, I don't know where he is now, but he stayed with Royal, I think, probably longer than all of us. But I heard he moved to California, but I haven't heard from him. I've been trying to locate him. I haven't been able to do that. So hopefully he's still here, still around.
So they were there before you got there. So I know you said you called a couple of names before. But
no,
who was there when you got there?
Donnie Chillis came mm-hmm. after I did.
Oh, okay. Who was playing guitar before then?
Before Donnie Chillis, a guy named Henry Nash. Ash. Henry Ash.
Okay.
He was from South Carolina. And Marvin Jolly's brother, a guy named Sonny Jolly, was playing guitar.
Mm-hmm. 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 What is the music scene like in D.C. now? Is it same? Are the bands still gigging now, or are they just basically closed because of the pandemic?
Well, things were closed down during the pandemic, but they're opening, are beginning to open up now. They're beginning to have more shows at the Kennedy Center and different places. They have quite mm-hmm. a few new clubs here, so I can't even start naming them because I mm-hmm. don't know the name of all of them.
Most
of the shows are done, though, at the Bethesda Blues Soccer Club in Bethesda.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they do shows down Westminster. That's mostly blues. They do like Blue Mondays. They call it for blues on Mondays and Fridays at Westminster. That's where Little Roy spent his latter days mostly performing there once or twice a year.
Mm-hmm. I remember seeing a post that I think you put up with Royal. He was in the hospital at the time. And he didn't speak about his condition. All he talked about was his fans, talked about the people that he loved. And I thought that was very moving. I thought that was a very moving video from a man who had spent probably over 50 years entertaining people. And so I thank you for say it again.
As he spent more than 50 years entertaining. I've been entertaining over 50 years myself.
Those years have gone by so fast, man. I don't know. They've gone by so fast. But, yeah, he has spent a good part of his life, and so have you, entertaining people. And I hope that you will continue to do so. I hope that you still have the desire to do so. I hope that you will continue to make good music and to bring good music forward. What are some of the things that you say you're working on now?
Greg and I are working on completing an album that we never did complete, the Fantasy album. We had released Fantasy and What You Get You Got from the album, but we never put the rest of the songs. We didn't go back in the studio to finish mixing everything down. We're going to do that. And hopefully within the next 6 to 8 months, I'll put something out.
Now, where can we find that? Where will we be able to look at it? We'll be able to go to find that.
Well, I think I'm going to go with doing it online with CD Baby, where people will be able to download it. And it wouldn't cost them very much to download, like maybe 99 cents or $1 to download the song, opposed to distributing it like I did my records, where I was shipping them all over the country, you know, with all the digital stuff that's going on nowadays. You don't have to do all of that because people can just go online and select the song and download it. And it costs them maybe a dollar, 9 cents or a dollar.
Right.
It's easier that way.
Well, our time is coming to an end. One of the things I wanted to do before I go, I wanted to ask you, how your family doing? How's the family doing?
Everybody in the family is doing great. Everyone is well. Including my daughter, that I met in 2016. I had a granddaughter that just got married on February 18th, and I went to Cleveland for that. And my son and I, we drove up, and we really had a good time. I enjoyed the family, and it was good talking to her. Mm-hmm. And so I have a brand new, grandson, in-law, and he's a real nice guy.
Okay, good. How's the sisters doing? How your sisters doing?
All my sisters are doing well, and all of them hang out together about 3 or 4 times a year. I take them all to dinner. just to hang out with them, you know, because they be hanging together most of the time. They'll call each other up and go out together. But I get them all together and take them to Cheesecake Factory or Prime Rib or somewhere and treat them to dinner. And they like
that's
that.
Cool. That's awesome.
Treat them on the birthdays.
That's awesome.
Mostly on the
that's
birthdays
awesome. That's...
I get them.
Well, please tell them I said hello. I thank you for being with me tonight. I thank you for sharing this, your experience with us. I pray that you will continue to do so. And we're going to talk very soon. Matter of fact, I will probably call you later on tonight because I want to give you the link for the program. But thank you again for being on the program tonight. And keep on giving good music out there so that people will know our history. Keep on posting about Lil Royal. Keep on posting about some of the things that you've experienced. I enjoy it, all those things that you post. I enjoy the great work that's being done by the Legendary Musicians Association of D.C., and I look forward to seeing more of those things. So, again, thank you, Doug, and we'll be talking real soon.
Okay, and I forgot to mention World's Fair, the band World's Fair that you and I played with also. which was under the leadership of Mr. Clay Robinson. And he has anthem. He has a new anthem that he's trying to present to the world. And matter of fact, I'll send you a link to that so you can hear it. I'm going to give him your phone number so you can talk to him yourself. But he's doing some very positive things out here. He's trying to unite the world. And I think their anthem is one of the things that may help.
Yeah, that would help. I would love to hear from Clay. I haven't spoken to Clay in many, many years. And I know he's a great musician, great songwriter. So I know that whatever he has is going to be quality material. But thank you so very much. And we ask you all to come back and listen to us again. Don't forget Gospel Gold. Every Monday night at 9 p.m., we are a program designed specifically for the historical preservation of traditional African-American gospel music. My name is Reverend Michael Rogers. I thank you for your time tonight, and God bless you.
I want to share my heart with you, and I hope you feel about it the same way too now. Oh, I want to do all that I can do for you, because I'm so glad to do it.
Yeah.
I'm so glad to do it.
So glad.
I want to share my life with you. The good, the bad, yes I do. And all.
So glad to do.
I was on the ground, but you wasn't.